Okay, and welcome back. This is the fourth and final part of this multiple part wrap of the 2021 season. I'm Tony Lightfoot once again, and just change it up a little bit. Vincent Stadelbauer.
Welcome back, folks. Last stretch. Three more tournaments to go.
All right, then. And Alice as well.
Hi, everyone again.
All right, then. So, yep, the big huge one for all the cheese, the World Championships being held at
Big Daddy.
Yes, the one. Well, we call the Nationals the Big Daddy. We got it.
Oh no, Nationals Big Mama. World's is Big Daddy.
Okay, all right then.
Yeah, World's a bit, you know, like a meaner tone to it. You know, it's a bit more intense. It's a Big Daddy.
But I didn't see an awful lot of that intensity at the World Championships because I mean, people were just happy. First of all, to have a World Championships to start off with, and secondly, to have a World Championships at a better than decent site, you know, with Jack and Leilani Travers putting it on over at Sunset Lakes, you know. So I mean, both of you actually skied in it. I didn't. I'm probably nowhere near a World Championships, even if I was in the
next one. You got 2 years to get in shape.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, I'd need to drop about 60 pounds and then get on the ski that's cooperative. But there you go. What kind of five did you get both of you skiing the Worlds? Because both of you came through with some pretty darn decent performances there.
Oh, the Worlds were absolutely amazing. I mean, hats off to the Travers, and I can't imagine the work it took. It was super, super nice. A lot of people were there. The weather was absolutely perfect. Not too hot, not too cold. Blue sky every day. The longest Worlds I've been to, and probably one of the longest Worlds that ever happened. It was a 6-day tournament, 200 plus entries. 109 men slalom skiers. Was I can't remember, 14 series or something like that.
At least nine.
There were more even. I think there was, you know, you're right, like 11 series or something like that. No, the Worlds were absolutely incredible. The performance were through the roof. Joe Poland obviously showed it, setting a overall world record, so that really, I mean, shows that it was excellent to ski.
Yeah, that was in the first round because, I mean, because of the setup for the world overall record, you have to ski all of the performances in the same round, you know. So, I mean, that was kind of like spread out over a couple of days. But enough about Joel Poland for the moment, because we'll get to him later in this description. What about you? Because you actually skied through 38 off and got a decent score into 10.75 meters, and you were in the slalom final for a while.
Yeah, well, for a while, for like 2 hours. No, even more, because about maybe a day and a half. No, I did my season's best. I tied my PB of last year. I scored 2 at 10.75, 2 at 39 off. Was my first time running 38 of the whole year, and still the only one I ran this year, unfortunately. I skied very good. The conditions were perfect. I was very happy with my performance. Was it expected? Not really. I mean, I was skiing pretty good in practice, but it's hard to know what you're gonna do on the water when you have been webcasting. Luckily for me, I skied the first day of the tournament, so I was still fairly fresh. Was an easy webcast day, so thanks to Alice, I didn't have to do much computer. I woke up early, got everything up and running. Yeah. And then basically 30 minutes into the webcast, Alice took over and I went on my day and tried to put the skier hat for
the most challenging thing about this webcast was actually getting the internet connection, because the internet came in on a large antenna, which is all the way across the facility. Then we had to string some fiber optic cable with some Ethernet converters and all that kind of stuff to push it in. But once it was in and once it was going, I mean, we had top quality stuff.
Yeah, the internet was very fast. It just comes in, as Tony said, it comes in, if I convert to feet, it comes in about 2,000 feet away from where the trailer was. It's a big point-to-point antenna. They receive internet from the near town, probably Groveland or something like that. And what they do is, from that big antenna, they beam it with smaller antennas to the houses that need it and the pro shop at Jack. But those kind of smaller point-to-point antennas, they're not really as reliable and they're not really as fast of an internet as if we hook up straight to the antenna. So yeah, we hooked up straight to the antenna, which that was quite a cable to pull because yeah. The cable went above the parking of Worlds. So we had to string it above the hangars here, Jack, and then string it up in the trees and then go under the Lake 3, out of the Lake 3 into cable ramps that we had rented, under Lake 2, which was the main tournament lake where slalom and jump were happening, into the trailer. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was a little bit, that was a cable that, and obviously it's our internet cable. So we had to make sure that every single feet of it was going to stay protected. It held up perfect.
Yes, it held up really, really well. And I mean, the performances, you know, were absolutely simply out of this world. I mean, Joel Poland, world overall record, you know, just recently been ratified. So congratulations.
Dane Meckler.
And Dane Meckler. I mean, who would have thought that he'd get through 41 off for a first time?
Brian Detrick in the runoff.
Oh, absolutely, you know.
Nate, obviously, I mean.
Winning.
Touching, yeah, the winning on top of this, touching the inside of two at 43. I mean,
yeah.
Not only he did the best performance ever made at a world championship, but he was, I mean, almost at some point, world record could have been almost possible at some point.
Yeah, indeed. And there was multiple world championship records. And then we see Alice, who made it through to the women's slalom final with a best score, you know, getting through 38 off and then putting a score at least a third of the way into the next pass, 39 and a half off.
Yeah, I'm still super excited about it. Honestly, for me, it was just a different scenario. As some people know, I tried to help out as much as possible Vince with the webcast. That tournament, though, I thought it was a little different for me. It was like an
actual...
She
didn't help nothing at Worlds.
It was an actual world championship. It was like 5 minutes from my home site, from Swiss, and the whole Italian team was coming there.
Yeah, that's the thing. You had a whole team behind you. I mean, you had...
That was the main difference for me.
You had Better, like, you had...
it was not just me hanging around, but I had like the physio coming with me, the doctor, my Beta, my coach, and then just the rest of the Italian team. So I was like, well, I can't really like... just leave and go help Vince for literally all day long when I know that all the physio and doctors, they will come here to really get us ready to perform our best. So what it is that I was, if Vince needed me, then I was going to go there and help. But on this tournament, I was more focused on myself, which I'm not saying it's going to be like this all the time, but at this tournament, at the end, it paid off. Like I was very well treated from the Italian team. And I didn't have a lot of expectation, even though for me as a skier, it was the very first year that in practice I ran so many 38 or 11 meters. And I never really ran so many. And this year, just before Worlds, I was like getting into like 39 a little bit. And I was like, oh, that sounds great, but I don't want to have too high expectation in case anything was going to go wrong. But I go into Worlds and I ski and I have Beth on the side. I have everyone kind of cheering for me. And I had Mario Pigozzi driving the boat, which I think he's one of the best drivers out there. He especially makes me feel really comfortable while skiing and kind of calm down at the end of each pass. So I knew I had to run 11 to make it into the final. It was just like, well, I mean, to make it into the top 12, I don't know how many buoys it was going to be to make the final at 39, but I knew I had to run 11. I was like, just now Mario was telling me, you know, like just one buoy at a time, just as Wade says, what does Wade say?
just be patient,
you know?
Patient.
So, you know, I've been trying to change a lot of my technique this year, and I had a slow gait, meaning like a good gait. I was not slow, but like I didn't rush it, and I just turned one and I turned two. And then four, I was like, I didn't even feel it. But like Tony, once he watched the world, because it was like, oh man, I thought you were going down because I turned so aggressive. My ski almost blew out. But then I hold on. And then I was so late to six ball. But I was like, I made it until this far. I have to run it.
Just grip it and rip it.
Exactly. And then I run the pass. I was like, oh my God, I'm so happy. But I was like, okay, now I need to be patient. I wanted to make sure that everything was confirmed. Everything went through. And then I go to 39. And the only thing I had in my mind was like, so my PB before that, it was 1.5. And the only thing I had in mind was like, Vince in the prelims, he did 2:10.75. I have to do like him. I just cannot do less.
We get pretty competitive.
Yeah, I mean, I know I ski at 55, he skis at 58, but we're kind of at the same level with rope. He used to run more 38.
I still ski faster, just so everyone knows. So
he used to run more 38s than me in tournaments. But I know that, like, I'm a lefty. I know that if I have a good gait, I might just end up the 2. And that's what I did. I just believed in me. I was like, now you're going to go just hard and crank one ball because you're a lefty. Just hold on. And then I almost fell a 2, but I made it.
All right, then. So, and that also contributed to your overall, right?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I didn't come into the tournament thinking about my overall at all. I was like, well, slalom first, and then trek is my second best discipline. So I was like,
despite the fact that you used that to qualify for the Masters earlier on in the season.
Right. And then jump was just out there. I didn't have many expectations. I always want to jump well, even though I don't practice much, I have to say. But at the end, with my slalom score, my trick score, and my jump score, I'm not sure what I ended up. Maybe 6 or
overall,
or
definitely top 10, and around.
But
six,
I definitely
seven,
had a chance, and I was like, jump is definitely not my discipline. Every year I say it's like I'm gonna stop jumping, but at the end, if I would have jumped just a little further, you know, who knows? You know, third or fourth spot might have been possible.
Yes, indeed. You know, and
all the emotions that happened at the World Championship, that was the nicest. You know, I mean, at every tournament, obviously we got skiers that are upset and skiers that are happy. But at the Worlds, it's very nice to be able to capture the extra emotion that are happening at the lake through our cameras, which I think we that's where we did the best at the Worlds, is try to get as much of this as possible. You know,
and you know what kind of struck me about the Worlds, and I'll get to the other results here because they're certainly worth mentioning. I felt with the World Championships, it was more of a homecoming than anything else, like a homecoming of like some of the best skiers who are currently skiing matched up with the best skiers that have ever skied. I mean, as busy as I am on the mic, I mean, I don't get an awful lot of time to actually walk around and talk with a lot of people, but I saw Carl Roberge, I saw Sammy Duval, I saw Ricky McCormick, I saw a whole bunch of Paul Seaton, yes, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned Paul Seaton, and I did highlight him. But I mean, he was my original coach, and he was the one who took Andy Mapple from
Lucky Lowe was
you know, like Lucky Lowe was there, you know. Basically, anyone that's had an impact in the sport of tournament water skiing was pretty much there, either competing or watching at the World Championships. And that
it was a combination of everything. Obviously, it was in Florida, was at a very well-established ski school that everyone knows at, the Traverse. And it was also the most, the way the criteria to ski Worlds were designed was the Worlds that attracted the most skiers. So between the conditions, the amount of skiers made really, and everyone that came and made it a very nice show.
Yes, indeed. You know, and going into the results, I mean, we saw Nate win the slalom. Dorian Llewellyn won the tricks, which I felt was a little bit of a surprise. I mean, basically people were falling left, right and center in the men's final. I still can't believe, you know, so many of those skiers came up short, you know, but in the end, you had Dorian Llewellyn. Jake Abelson in third place, you know, which was the surprise package, you know. I'd, to this day, I remember giving the rest of the medal winners champagne, and I gave him sparkling apple juice.
He's
on the
also
bone
a great guy on the mic, huh?
He is amazing. Yes, he's great.
Before you say it,
yeah. You know, and I keep watching the webcast again. I think we need to get a higher chair for him, you know, because his head barely got up above
electronic
the
electronic chair. Press a button, go higher and
yeah,
lower,
indeed.
From the trailer.
So, yeah, so Ryan Dodd, only tournament of the year, jumps over 70 meters, wins that title.
Jacinta wins for the fifth,
Fifth time.
Sasha winning overall. Sasha, then Ishashka winning overall.
Yeah, and then we got Anna Gay winning tricks, you know, and then Jamie Ball winning slalom, you know. So, I mean, that was a tournament for the ages.
Jamie Ball winning slalom, being one of the youngest women to ever win an open title.
Yeah.
Tied, I believe, with Whitney. Whitney yes. was like 20 or 21 when she won in Canada. But, I mean, Jamie not only win worlds, which was incredible, she won it.
And I mean,
at 21 years old.
And I mean, you can pull statistics left, right, and center from that event. Sasha Denyerskaya, like, winning the overall. Joe Poland winning the overall. Second British skier ever to win the men's overall after Mike Hazelwood way back in 1977. You know, and like the team Canada was were the winners, and then USA and
Ryan
then
Dodd winning for like the third time in a row,
something like that. Yeah, the United States were actually in third. Great Britain was actually in second. You know, so I mean that was a very very pleasant.
That made me happy.
Yeah, that made me extremely happy. You know, and just being a part of that. You know, with all the reaction from the World Championships. You know, we did a good job. You know, with that.
Oh, this year the way I mean, it was incredible. I mean, three worlds the same year. That's already something that usually doesn't happen because mm-hmm. they make sure that the under 21s are not going to be the same years at Open, because usually there's a lot of under 21 skiers skiing the Open as well. And three worlds, not only in the US, but in Florida. That was, that was a lineup, you know, under 17, under 21 at Corey, Open at Jack. And luckily for us, we were able to webcast all those three worlds. So, I mean, that was that was something.
So after I folded up my red jacket after the award presentations, I thought I looked pretty spiffy in that, to be honest. The next day came folding up the stuff, and then we realized the weed grown at the bottom of the lake doesn't really help so far as retrieving the cables was concerned.
Yeah, no, we had a rough wrap. We had two things. We had a very good party, which made it a rough wrap, and the site, as Tony said, they have quite a bit of weeds at the bottom of the lake that all wrapped around the cable, and we were wrapped Sunday night, basically the day of the event. We were already wrapped before the banquet started. We just had to wrap all the cables that were in the lake, which, I mean, obviously it's a bit of work, but normally you knock that thing down in 2 hours, and it took us six because of all the weeds. Yeah, but okay. It's a good old reminder of what it takes.
Indeed. All right then, two more tournaments to come and then the season's wrapped. Okay, we got Mastercraft Pro.
Another tough one with the weather, isn't it?
Yeah, another one, certainly. I mean, two-day competition, what was it? It was
slalom and jump.
Friday, Saturday, wasn't it?
Friday, Saturday, slalom and jump. Second year, they put on my Mastercraft in action.
Over at Ski Fluid, yeah.
Over at Lake Drew.
Lake Drew. Okay. And the weather played a significant part in this because the wind was blowing
rain,
up and down.
Rain
and wind, you know, I mean. And I mean, they do a good job, you know, putting on this competition. And as a matter of fact, the wind was so strong and so intense that they actually moved the jump from their original position to the alternate position so the skiers could actually take advantage of that headwind.
And despite the wind and the rain, Jacinta Carroll.
Yes, absolutely. First ever female competitor to go over 200 feet. Now there's a bit of a backstory behind that one, because she actually produced that jump in a third optional round. You know, she decided, okay, if I'm going to go for the world record, I might as well get it done now under tournament conditions.
Which was part of the tournament. The tournament was written before that was going to be an optional round by the end, because I think a lot of people get confused. They all think they added the round during the event. No, you're not allowed to do that, first of all. Once the tournament is sanctioned for a certain amount of round, it needs to stick to that certain amount of round. Otherwise, the score that are happening in that round that wasn't sanctioned, well, can't count. But yeah, the tournament was sanctioned with that optional round, and she jumped and she did it.
Yes, absolutely. With imagery that was extracted from our YouTube presence, you know, and shown all across Australia, apparently, you know. So well done to Jacinta Carroll. The winner of the men's jump was Freddy Krueger, I believe, yes. And I mean, another great win for him. He still continues to bang out those distances. And
a new timer, you know.
Yeah, indeed. And what about the slalom event? I mean, Nate Smith once again proving that he's head and shoulders above everybody else at this moment.
Reinforced his first place into the tour by scoring 2 at 41. And
Regina won the slalom, right?
And Regina won the slalom, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, because Whitney was still
running three at 39. Exactly.
Whitney was still recuperating from the injury that she sustained at the World Championships.
Eye and concussion, from what I heard also.
Yeah, indeed. You know, I mean, she gave it a good shot, you know. I mean, she cleared concussion protocol enough to ski in the finals, but obviously the injury to her eye was just too much for her to continue on in the World Championships and indeed the remainder of the season. You know, so, and I mean, you skied in that event as well in the slalom. I mean, just give us a sense of how rough the conditions were. I mean, because the first two thirds of the course after the dock was okay, but once you got to the exposed parts of the lake, then it got really, really bumpy in a hurry.
Yeah, basically, so how the lake is built is that it's a man-made lake, and then it's closed until basically the last 2-3 buoys of the course, and then it opens up. And that's where the wind comes in. So basically, you ski through quarter of the course. It's still windy, but it's mostly like on the body and not really on the water. And then as soon as the lake opens up, you really feel the choppy waves running through the ski. And then it's like, it gets more unstable to your skiing. You know it's there, but it's really hard to think about it while skiing. At 5 and 6, now I'm going to have wind, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was the hard part for me. And just making sure, I knew it was not going to be a big score, but just making sure I would still be strong on the water. And it's just try to do my best. It's always rough, but at the end, the best skier always ski, I mean, not their best, but always ski great on this condition. And it's always a good practice.
Mm-hmm.
Hard condition, but it was, at the end, turned out a good tournament.
It was good. Obviously, I should have mentioned this a little bit earlier, but one of the things that we put into the webcast a little bit, and I mean, you don't necessarily hear it too much spoken about it, but our communication between the trailer and the announcing desk right now, because for those of you eagle-eyed people, you're seeing the headphones and the microphones and all that kind of stuff, but you don't see the little devices underneath the Henry pods, you know, which... You know, I don't know if any of you have actually picked up a radio or a CB radio or that kind of stuff, but whenever you're trying to communicate to someone and you're trying to want to say things loudly and clearly, does it come through on the other side very, very well? Our internal communications took a 1,000% boost this year, and I think it really showed, because, you know, I can hear the intense tones of Vince, you know, with his technical directing, and then I hear the soft melodic tones of Alice whenever she took over, you know.
I'm definitely awake behind the computer for those who wonders, and I make sure that everyone in the crew stays awake through my little talkback.
And what about you? Was that a change you were comfortable with as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not behind the screen, in the main screen as much as Vince. So every time I talk, well, I talk normal. I'm very clear and patient. But I'm not in the same position if, like, something rush happened or, like, you're in the middle of, like, oh, something, like, came up. So the situation is different, of course, and then you react different as well.
I mean, communication is really key in what we do, and I think it helped a lot being more efficient and just delivering a better product. And I think we're pretty good at keeping it only to what it needs. You know, there is not much jokes happening through talkbacks.
It's yeah, usually, and also
there's already so much stuff happening. You don't really.
We try and keep it light as much as possible.
Yeah, you don't really talk if you don't have to, or you don't really do something if
and
you don't have to.
And the good thing that I really like is that people don't even notice. You know, it's like. For example, with Tony has his headphones and you just talked with him instead of like from a radio, everyone would hear what you say. And it's like personal, but also like Tony just keeps talking while hearing Vince, which is definitely not an easy thing to do. So I really like that part.
You got very good at Sometimes.
Yeah, just tuning down that return knob a little bit.
I'm blown away. If you guys would know, sometimes I'm having full sentences that I'm saying to Tony while he's talking to the audience, no problem. And still someone listens, I guess.
Mm-hmm. It takes a while to convert and to actually get used to that kind of thing as well, you know. But I just love the way that Alice counts me down from commercials, and we're to you in
3, 2, and 1.
And you're back. Well, there you go.
I'm not so soft.
And then there's this, Tony, you're up.
I'm not so soft.
But there you go. So we've got the master guy.
Went to the palm trees.
Yep, to the palm trees of the Greater Miami Ski Club. You know, first time I've been there, but certainly not the first time for many of our competitors. You know, I mean, this is the place to go to in the Miami area to ski, you know, and the setup.
Andy tied his own world record over there back in the days.
Yeah, absolutely. And
which Nate equaled that score at the event.
And the nationals they had there like way, way back in the 60s, you know. I mean, this is like a five course facility all running in the one direction. They have one going in the east-west, and they've got a jump lake and everything, all right underneath the flight path of Miami International Airport, which
was really the pilot place for man-made lakes. From what I heard, a lot of people told me that, yeah, all the man-made lakes kind of, yeah, I mean, Miami, the Greater Miami Ski Club showed that man-made lake was the way to go, and kind of showed the measurements that were needed, at least in width.
Yeah, and every morning that we got there, we were like playing Miami from Will Smith, full blast,
and got 5 a.m. in the car, Tony and myself. We're getting in the Miami mood.
There you go. And I tell you, that was the last event for the trailer for the season. You got everything situated there.
Wrapped up the 2021 season, Miami.
And it was a real good event. And these lakes, you know, they were dug out to provide the earth and the embankments for the
roads around that.
For the roads, yeah, the turnpike, the interstate, and I think
the causeway or something like
that.
Yeah,
and for Miami International Airport itself. But it was a good event, you know. I mean, there was a nice little restaurant at the
first
end
time,
of the lake.
It was the first time that they put on a pro event there recently.
It was a really good vibe for the last tournament in Miami.
Hats
really
off
good
to Gonzalo Pesquera, president of the Greater Miami.
Yeah, it was real good, you know. I mean,
they're already registered for next year. We're going there normally November 3rd and 4th or something like that. Not November, first weekend of November.
November, you know. So we've got a full season coming up ahead of us in 2022. But let's round up this one, Miami. They had some really good scores.
Elizabeth Montavon, the performance of the weekend.
Yeah, we'll get to her in a moment. But I mean, they had to kind of shorten the format because of the lack of sunlight. Because it just took place in November, you know. So,
6 p.m. it started.
And it was a little rolly there, which necessitated the need for an extended drop period on each end of the course. Wasn't that right?
Yeah. So they ran, I believe, 70 or 75 second wait time, which, as people know, there's a wait time. There's a time in the boat that goes off when the skier exits the exit gate. It triggers in the exit gate, not when the boat actually stops at the end of the lake, but at the exit gate. And normally in tournament, it's about 45 seconds. You set that wait time in relation to basically, yes, the backwash on the lake. How fast can you go without making the lake any rolly? And there, just the fact that that lake's been dug quite a long time ago. They haven't really redone the shoreline, so it had a little bit more of a backwash, especially in tournament when you got so
make
much.
Make it nicer a little bit for the skiers.
When you got so much skiing going on, they wanted to make sure the conditions were good. So they set it to 70, which obviously adds up a little bit to taking more times per skier. Yeah.
Yes, and the tournament ended up being run very, very well. Unfortunately, though, at least for Alice, was...
First one out.
Darn it.
First one out. I haven't really counted, but now it's been a couple of tournaments that I've been the very first one out of the finals. I knew what I had to do.
We gotta change formats for next year, you know. I gotta say, wherever Alice is, well, the one after is out.
I mean, it was a good tournament. I knew the conditions were a little bit hard. I knew what I had to do in that specific round. I knew I had to do Paige because in the first round, well, she skied a little bit worse than me, so she was ahead of me on the second round. And I knew that to make it into the final, I had to beat her. And she goes out, and I believe she does 2.5 at 11, 38 off. So I knew I had to equal her score. And I was really focused. I was like, get just a little bit of a good one and then be patient and two, just make it to three. And unfortunately, didn't happen. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
It's que sera, sera, you know.
Yeah, so. I'll learn from it and hopefully get stronger.
You know. It was just one of those strange tournaments, I guess. But the champions, Nate Smith again, coming through with a win in that event. And rather surprisingly, I mean, given the circumstances between herself and whoever she was faced with in the final, Elizabeth Montavon comes through and wins the Miami Pro.
She performs at the last event, huh? Because last year she did her first pro podium.
But she got second, right?
At Mastercraft, which mm-hmm. was the last event of the 2020 season, sorry.
Yeah.
And this year, she did her first pro win at the last event of the 2021 season.
I don't know. She always said that.
She's a late bloomer in this season.
She worked really hard this season. And I think she was also very happy, first of all, to be in a runoff with Regina, but also to have run so many 11 or 38 off in a single tournament. She's a great skier, but you know, sometimes it just happens that she doesn't run it sometimes. And this tournament, she did multiple times and found herself, in a runoff against Regina. And then,
hang on a second, I think I'm getting tunes from her own podcast invading this one, you know, because you almost describe verbatim exactly what she said, you know. So I don't know whether you listen to a Ski or Die podcast, but certainly a maiden win in the in the Miami Pro, and that was the end of the season, you know. So so what was it? Jamie Ball got the women's water ski pro tour, women's overall slalom title, when Nate Smith did the same for men's.
Yeah. Girls, Jamie Ball, pro tour champ, second Whitney McClintock, and third Manon Costar.
Mm-hmm.
And then the guys, we got Nate Smith first, Freddie second, and then we had a very, very, very tight spot between what ended up Will third and Tigas fourth. They were going back and forth the whole season.
There was nothing to separate them except for the fact their sixth best score out of the entire season. Because
you took
five towards the season standings. And
so the way the Pro Tour works for everyone is we take the five best performance five best placement made throughout the season, and they were actually perfectly tied with 216 points each. So we had to go down to the sixth tournament, which Will actually ended up, I believe, one spot above Tigas, which put Will third of the Pro Tour. But I mean, that really shows how competitive the field is and how competitive Will and Tigas are still now.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, and it was a great season, you know, and you know, after the event, it didn't take me that long to write my post on Facebook, because it was basically based upon the speech that I wrote about a few days before, you know,
which was excellent.
Which was okay. I mean, it wasn't my best work, but yeah. I mean, the one when I was writing it, I was trying to make sure that it didn't do didn't do two things. One, to actually mention by name anyone that was actually involved in the organization and all the various things. Okay, because if I start mentioning people, then I'm gonna forget one or two or that kind of thing. And you know, and the one phrase that gets bandied around, and this is the second thing, are the two words thank you. You know, because I don't think thank you is good enough, really, to express our gratitude for what had been a fantastic season by all of these guys, you know. So those are the two things that are
definitely
in
mind. It takes tremendous amount of people to do what we do. I can, as Tony said, I can thank the crew and everyone enough for really the I mean, it's not just work, is you got to dedicate, it's a lifestyle, you know, what we do. And a lot of the, I mean, the whole crew has been dedicating their life now for many, many years to TWBC. So definitely hats off to that. And to all the tournament organizers that obviously trust us with their event and giving exposures to their event. And we hope we gain their trust, and we hope
nearly 400 hours.
Yeah, 400 hours of webcast.
Yeah, I mean,
every hour felt like a mountain. But I mean, if you do step by step, and we were prepared, and we got through it, and I'm looking forward for next year. We're gonna obviously work hard this winter on technical stuff, but also trying to make TWBC a bit more financially sustainable. So we're gonna try to get a bit of webcast sponsors to make sure we're able to keep doing what we're doing.
And I mean that goes alongside the Waterski Pro Tour as well, because they're obviously looking for like a season's long sponsor that can actually sustainably sponsor the entire
encompass the whole
and doing the whole thing, you know. And in order to do that, you've got to tick some certain boxes, you know. I mean, it can't be one boat company for the entire season, can't be one ski company for the entire season, nothing that's really directly water ski related, you know. And I'm guessing going forwards, that's what we at TWBC and the Waterski Pro Tour should be striving for going forward. You know, that's the big picture.
There's a very good, it's small, but it's good ecosystem happening in the industry of skiing with brands supporting different events and both companies supporting different events. And TWBC and Waterski Pro Tour obviously don't want to change that ecosystem that's already running and that's running well enough to have all those events. So that's part of our work, is to go and bring new sponsors to an industry which slowly they've been coming. So hopefully we're gonna keep exploring that a lot this winter, and that's gonna be the biggest task of this winter, is to find more money for the sport of water ski.
So if you represent an energy company or an airline or any other big industry player like that, please get in touch with Vince at
Please
Pro-Gil.
Dial 800-TWBC.
Something like that.
No, but get in touch with us, definitely. If you got some spare cash, call me.
All right, then. So anything you'd want to say before we round off, Liche?
I just wanted to say this was a long year grid of tournaments, many tournaments going on, and one thing that I have to say about the webcast and you guys especially, that you're never satisfied, but in a good way. I think you always want more, even though people say, oh, it's amazing. You guys always want more. You always want perfection. And I think this is really needed for the sport. This is something that is going to bring you guys and the sport to the next level. And that's what we want to see in the future, you know.
All right, then. And with that, we'll round off this fourth and final part. Anything you want to add, Vincent?
Ciao for now.
That's my line. That is my line.
I'm stealing it.
Saying,
ciao for now.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen.
All right.
Auf Wiedersehen for now.
All right. Jetzt, auf Wiedersehen jetzt.
Here we go.
Okay, something like that. Anyway. Whatever. Okay.
We got a real German on the side.
See you in 2022.
See you in 2022, indeed. That's Alice, that's Vincent, and I'm Tony Lightfoot. That represents the balance of this podcast, the final podcast of a four-parter. And until next time, I'm stealing it back. Ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.